My name is Mike Diedrich, and I'm with Veterans for Peace Chapter 92, Daniel Ellsberg Chapter here in Seattle. And with me today are the project managers of the Golden Rule Project, which is a nuclear boat, anti-nuclear boat, which is a project of Veterans for Peace. And with me, I'll let you introduce all of you. Managers and managers to be for Golden Rule Project. So go ahead.
Hi, I'm Helen Jacquard. I have been the project manager for the Golden Rule sailboat since 2015. I had heard about the Golden Rule starting in 2011, had no idea that I would become involved with the project at all, but she captured me. And so I ended up learning how to sail on her and learning how to give public talks and do the rest of the organizing that goes into a project like this. After 9 years of being the project manager and building up that work to be something that looked like it has a lot more infrastructure than it really does, it became necessary to share the load. And so now we have a co-manager, Michelle Marcinet.
Hi, my name is Michelle Marcinet. Hi, I'm really glad to be a part of the Golden Rule. I heard about the boat in 2019 when I was in Hawaii for my grandfather's 90th birthday. At that time, I didn't actually get to meet the boat or Helen, but I got her number. And a couple of years later, I was offered to apply to crew the boat in an ocean crossing from Honolulu to San Francisco. And so through the application process, I was selected to do that. And we did make a successful ocean crossing. I spent about 2 weeks on board training beforehand in Hawaii, and then 28 to 30 days crossing the ocean on her. So really learning a lot with a four-person crew, two females, two males, two captains, one female, one male. And we crossed that ocean with that sailboat, and I was just in love with the boat. It is definitely a very magical piece of my life since then. And when we decided they wanted another project manager, I said, let me apply for that too. So here we are.
Well, Helen, why don't we go ahead and introduce Shicho too while we're doing introductions. So go ahead, Shicho.
Just give a little bit of background to that, in that the 1958 voyage of the Golden Rule inspired the founding of Greenpeace. And when the Golden Rule was attempting to get to Asia and couldn't, it inspired the founding of yet another peace boat called Jonah's Whale. And Sheikh Cho was a member of the crew of the new peace boat.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I'm from South Korea. South part of South Korea, Jeju Island in Gangjeong Village, which is protesting against the military base.
Thank you. Actually, we should probably just back up a bit, but the Golden Rule was eventually sailed to the South Pacific to protest nuclear tests in 1954. Is that correct? Or 58.
Let's talk about the history of the Golden Rule, starting in 1958. And Michelle's going to get us started on that part of our information.
Yeah, so in 1958, the story is, and the truth is, that four Quakers decided to get a peace boat and sail it right into the Marshall Islands to put themselves in harm's way of the atmospheric nuclear testing that the U.S. military was doing there. People around the world knew it was wrong. There was a lot of publicity letting people know it was wrong, and yet the military continued to do it. Therefore, the Quakers set sail on the Golden Rule out of San Diego.
No, it's Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. And they made it to Hawaii, got some refueled, tried to go out to Marshall Islands, was detained and returned to Hawaii. And they were pretty determined. So they went out again a second time to put themselves in harm's way. And the Coast Guard caught up with them, detained them, arrested them, jailed them, put them on trial. And in that time period, a lot of people were pretty upset that the military would do that to people who were just protesting such a horrific test. I mean, the things that have happened since then to the people in the Marshall Islands and the entire existence of the Pacific Ocean, that's really the start of the Golden Rule. While they were, by the time they got out of jail, they went through trial. Was that a 2 year, I mean,
2 months,
2 month period of time. The boat then was sold and not seen again really in any of our history until 2010. And that's when Veterans for Peace was offered the opportunity to become a part of the restoration and maybe taking it and figuring out how to keep the boat sailing for a nuclear free world and continue that mission that the Golden Rule initially had. And here we are, we're sailing.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was my understanding that the boat had actually sunk in Humboldt Bay, and they went and picked it up and put it on the hard, as they say. And there's a picture I've seen of the Humboldt with a big hole in the hull. And
that's right. She had been anchored out in Humboldt Bay, far northern California, when she was probably in the way of other boats, and was brought over to a fixed dock, not a floating dock, where you have to tie it up in a special way in order to not bang it. Well, whatever happened, the gale came along and bashed her against that dock. And the next morning after the gale, Leroy Zerlang, the owner of the boatyard there, went outside to see what was he going to do about the Golden Rule, and he looked over and it was gone. So he got in his skiff and he motored all around Humboldt Bay. Where's the Golden Rule? Where's the Golden Rule? Finally, he came back to his own dock, got out a boat hook, poked around. Yep, there she is. So he dragged her up into the sand of his boatyard. And he called up his best friend, Chuck DeWitt, who lives only a mile away, and said, "Hey, Chuck, let's share a bottle of Maker's Mark and use the Golden Rule wood for a bonfire. That's going to be fun." Well, Chuck DeWitt is a Vietnam War veteran and a member of Veterans for Peace in Humboldt Bay. So he drove over there to the boatyard and he said, "What the hell is the Golden Rule?" Leroy pointed to her sorry self and said, "There she is." Well, then they got to talking, and it turned out that the Golden Rule had this famous history. Leroy tried to sell her, but even though he got a couple of offers, he got talked into letting Veterans for Peace restore her. So that's kind of the story of the beginning of the restoration. About six people put in $1,000 each to start buying wood and other materials. They found that the boatwright that worked in Leroy's boatyard was perfectly capable of getting everything started. So off they started. And, you know, most wooden boat rebuilds are never finished. Over 90% are abandoned at some point. But the Golden Rule got finished. So she's a very lucky boat from the beginning.
So go ahead and give us the after the thing got finished and floating, what happened next? And sort of
what did happen? Well,
it became a formal project of Veterans for Peace.
Exactly. So back in 2012, while she was still under construction, Veterans for Peace National adopted her as a national project. And as part of Veterans for Peace, this embodies two of the goals of the mission statement of Veterans for Peace. One is to try to stop our government from interfering overtly and covertly in the affairs of other nations. So we protest against militarism, and we protest to stop nuclear weapons. So the other part of the Veterans for Peace mission statement that we fulfill is to bring about an end to the arms race and to reduce and ultimately eliminate nuclear weapons. So this was the first time that Veterans for Peace had really gotten involved with implementing that part of their mission statement. We're really proud to have done that. So what we did was, when we finished her, we sailed down to San Diego for the Veterans for Peace National Convention. Were you there, Mike?
No, I wasn't.
Well, that was a very big convention, and the Golden Rule was the star of the show. So, as a crew member, I was out on that boat taking Veterans for Peace members sailing for three or four times a day for 3 weeks. So very intense work for us as crew. And then we port hopped back north. We made 10 stops on our way back up to Humboldt Bay, giving presentations to mostly peace and justice folks and mostly Veterans for Peace. That kind of began this whole pattern of sailing for peace and a nuclear-free world. So the second voyage, 2016, we went where we are right now, the Pacific Northwest, where we were in four wooden boat shows. We protested against Fleet Week and the Indian Island Munitions Depot near Port Townsend. And we gave 23 educational presentations all over the coasts of Oregon, Washington, and even into Vancouver and Victoria, British Columbia. Then in 2017, 18, and 19, we went up and down the West Coast a lot. And eventually we decided to, in 2017, we made the decision to sail out into the Pacific to protest against nuclear war because President Trump and President Kim of North Korea were threatening each other with nuclear war. And we started out, made it to Hilo, Hawaii, and sailed all around the Hawaiian Islands for almost 2 years and prepared to sail to the Marshall Islands, where the boat was originally headed. And then we were going to go on to Guam, Okinawa, and Japan, hoping to be there in time for the 75th anniversary of the dropping of those bombs. But this time, the Golden Rule was stopped by COVID, and we could not continue. So we waited until it was safe to crew the boat again and brought her back to California. We sailed down to San Diego and back, and then from San Francisco Bay in 2022, we put her on a truck and took her to Minneapolis to begin a 10,000-mile voyage around the entire eastern United States. Starting in Minneapolis, we sailed down the center of the country, around the tip of Florida, and visited Cuba. We went up to Washington, D.C. and New York City. We visited, we gave out Veterans for Peace nuclear posture reviews to every member of the House and Senate. We went to New York City and we visited the United Nations. There were 13 countries hosted us for a meeting to talk about the Golden Rule and the UN Treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. We sailed to protest against the Groton, Connecticut electric boat nuclear armed submarines and up to Bath, Maine, where they make nuclear armed warships. So then we went back to New York City, sailed all around the Great Lakes, finally put her on a boat again in Chicago and brought her back to California, from which we sailed, what, a week ago, 10 days ago? From Northern California up to, we'll be arriving in Seattle soon.
Is the boat here now, or is on its way?
She's on her way.
Yeah.
This morning she left Nia Bay,
Oh,
and
okay.
tonight they'll spend the night in Port Townsend, And tomorrow night, they'll spend the night in Elliott Bay, probably. And on Monday morning, they're going to sail through the Ballard Locks and dock at the Center for Wooden Boats in Lake Union, where we will be until August 9th. On August 9th, we'll sail from Lake Union back out to Bell Harbor Marina in Elliott Bay so that we can be pre-positioned for a big voyage from Seattle to Tacoma on August 10th.
Busy, busy, busy. Well, it's in addition to Seafair, there's also going to be a sort of get together at the American Friends in University District, the 9th, I believe it is. And we will use that opportunity to go down. Actually, the boat will be down on Lake Union, right?
Yes, and we plan to take the Golden Rule from the Center for Wooden Boats in Lake Union and dock for the afternoon on the 9th, August 9th, at Ivor's Salmon House, use their day-use dock, and let people come see the boat. And then the crew will take her out to Bell Harbor Marina. And then at 6 p.m. starts a potluck at the University Friends meeting in the social hall. The potluck starts at 6 and the program starts at 7 with music, a film, and wonderful presenters there. So we're looking forward to that. And that's where Sheikh Cho will get an opportunity to talk about Jonas Whale, the peace boat that the Golden Rule recently inspired, and her voyage on Jonas Whale, which was 107 days, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Can you talk to, tell us some more about that? Sheikh Cho now, in addition to making your presentation at the Friends, but everybody'd like to hear what you've got to say about your voyage and your involvement.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I would like to express our solidarity with the friends around the world who fight against the military base and militarism. The Gangjeong village, which I came from, is located in South Korea and South part of the South Korea, and has been making peace as a way of life since the completion of the naval base in 2016. So I am here to share the story of the 3,000 mile, 700 day voyage of the boat Jonas Whale, which departed from Gangjeong village in 2023. Since 2014, Gangjeong village has been solidarity with Taiwan, Okinawa, and the southwestern island of Japan. Because we are similar, islands have a history of similar pain. They are so beautiful that they are used as tourism, and they have a geopolitical military value. Because of the islands are connected by the sea, we crossed the ocean and started sailing project Gongpyeonghae, which means Sea of Peace and Coexistence by Jonas Whale. We visited small island and met island people as a crew of Jonas Whale. I came to believe that these small intimate connections. And I am also here for another small connection. Our other important duty was witnessing. We have witnessed the beauty of the island and how it is disappearing, and also protesting people even in small island. As a witness, I am here to share the meaning of this witnessing. So we have heard from island people that new military bases have been built within recent 5 years, and most islands have small populations, so voice of resistance have been unable to stop the construction, but it's Japan self-defense forces or South Korea military bases. They are under the United States. And the name of base in Jeju, Kangjeong Village, is Jeju Civilian Military Complex Port. But only in last year, 2023, U.S. warship docked there 5 times, and even once a nuclear submarine visited. So we will set sail again in every next year. We plan to sail annually, and Kangjeong Village offers programs that people can learn about sailing and peace to be a crew. So come and visit, and additionally, Kangjeong Village published news about the not only Kangjeong but also Korea and East Asia. So you can find more information at savejejunow.org. And finally, I would like to share a part of the declaration from the first departure of Jonas Well ceremony. We refuse to call the sea surrounded by China, Korea, and Japan by the imperialist name East Asia Sea any longer. We will call it the Sea of Peace and Coexistence because it is peaceful sea where all living creatures should coexist within humans. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful exposition of another effort by native people in the Pacific to deal with the actual the nuclear militarism and the nuclear threat. And it's all of us who are involved in peace and justice work. Thank you for your effort and your ongoing effort. I think it's going to make a big difference. Look forward to meeting you perhaps on this trip. So if the Golden Rule is the Golden Rule actually had the funding for the Golden Rule basically for the basically the maintenance and upkeep of the wooden boats are notoriously expensive to fix and keep. I know that you just had to replace the transmission. Is the funding adequate, or do you is there actually plenty of room for actually more donations to for the upkeep of the boat?
We rely on the donations from people who attend our events and go sailing with us. Once we have connection with them and they fall in love with this boat, they really want to keep her sailing for a nuclear-free world. And they go on our website, VFP, as in Veterans for Peace, VFP, goldenrule.org. And there's an easy way for you to donate to us that way. And so we hope that you show up at our events and sign up to help us to do this. If you give us your name and your email address, we'll send you electronic newsletters. If you give us a donation and we get your physical address, then we'll send you physical newsletters, which are beautiful and explain what we have been doing and what we will do in the near future. So yes, it's not cheap to run a boat. There's no doubt about that. We have been running on a shoestring budget for the whole time, and we do everything that we can to acquire parts inexpensively and get donations as needed. Most of us are volunteers, and most of the crew members are volunteers. So we're not putting the money into people. We're putting the money into diesel and food for the crew and docks and sometimes events and publications so that people can learn about us. So we've got our literature available. And on our website, vfpgoldenrule.org, we have a resources page where you can download information about us and actions you can take to stop the possibility of nuclear war. And that's one of the main topics of our presentations.
You mentioned some of the places that have been and but isn't the Golden Rule planning some trips up to Canada and the American and Canadian islands?
That's correct. Just like in 2016, we're so from Seattle, where we're about to arrive Monday, August 5th. We're then on the 10th, we're heading down to Tacoma, then Olympia, and then from there, go ahead, Michelle, you've been working on that schedule.
I have, but I might need to look at my notes.
Well, that's fine. You go
Notes
ahead and look them up
by heart.
because I'm really excited about going back to Canada again for a wooden boat show and to visit all of our friends in Vancouver and Victoria.
Yeah, so we got to Tacoma, right? So we've got plans in Tacoma. We've got plans in Olympia. We are going to be going up to Blake Island. This is a this. Maybe I'm not, I don't have, mine's not updating. It's
Oh,
not,
anyway,
doesn't look
so
like it.
anyway, yeah, we're going to make three or four stops on our way from Tacoma up to Blaine. P International Peace Arch
Right.
Park is going to be a very big, wonderful event on August 23rd, starting at 3 p.m. It's a peace party in the park. We love peace parties in the park. Lots of music and chance to talk with people, meet the crew. And from there, we're headed up to Vancouver, BC. We're not sure of the venue yet. We know that we're going to dock in North Vancouver at Burrard Docks, St. Roch. Is that right? St.
St.
Roch
Roch.
Harbor. And then from there, we're going to Friday Harbor, where so one fun thing that's happened in 2016 and again is happening this year. The fourth owner of the Golden Rule, Terry Lush, had a son, Ed Lush, who sailed the Golden Rule as a youth for a couple of years. And he was one of our captains in 2016, and he will be our captain in the Salish Sea, which is the north of Puget Sound up to Vancouver, Victoria, the San Juan Islands. This year as well. So he's the guy who's going to take us into Canada twice. And in Friday Harbor on San Juan Island, where he lives, he's putting together a wonderful presentation on August 27th. A great opportunity for us to be in the San Juan Island Yacht Club, which is just a beautiful place with excellent people going to attend our presentation there.
Well, that's great. So, what sort of a reception do the Canadians give you generally?
Oh, they're great. We've got people up there that are trying to pressure the Canadian government into signing and ratifying the United Nations Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear
Yes,
Weapons.
great.
They don't have nuclear weapons. Canada does not have them themselves, so there's no reason why they can't sign this treaty. But it's unusual. There's only been one NATO member that has even shown an interest in signing the treaty and has been attending the meeting of states parties, those that have signed or ratified the treaty, that has even been attending those meetings. So we need to start pressuring NATO countries to sign on to no nuclear weapons, the nuclear weapons ban treaty. And then we need to get everybody on board to actually get rid of the weapons.
You know, as part of this history is that you may know it, but the anti-nuclear movement actually started in Great Britain. And out of that nuclear was actually came the what we recognize now as the peace symbol, and the two legs of it represent if you want to go peace symbol information out, but it came out of that movement, and it was an anti-nuclear peace symbol really originally. It is been used as a peace symbol commonly since then, but is part of that history of that the Quakers used as far as anti-nuclear activity. It's really a nice. It's really the history of anti-nuclear activism goes back a long way.
Yes, it does. It was really big in the 1980s with that million person march in Washington. And but yes, the peace symbol was actually a symbol of the Committee for Nuclear Disarmament.
Yeah.
And right. And yeah, we tell the story when we can show the videos, because it's really wonderful to show how the semaphore symbols for N for nuclear and D for disarmament made up the inside, and the circle around the outside represents the globe.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you need to add? I mean, we've got some fair amount of time left, 10 minutes or so, about as far as, what sort of, when you were on the East Coast, what sort of reception did you get out there? I mean, people don't seem to probably as informed as people are on the West Coast about nuclear weapons. And I don't know, maybe that's just my biased opinion, but is that true? What sort of a reception did you get from people in the Eastern United States?
Well, they are very aware. And for example, when we went to Kings Bay, Georgia, where they have an equivalent of where we're sitting right now, a nuclear armed submarine base. There's only two in the United States. And eight of the nuclear armed submarines are hosted here, 20 miles from Seattle at Bangor Trident Nuclear Submarine Base. The others are based in Kings Bay, Georgia, at the other Trident Nuclear Submarine Base. We went out with a large group of people to protest on the streets at the base, but then we also took people sailing past the nuclear armed submarines there, as we will on September 4th here on Hood Canal. So then, but, you know, everybody that we meet, no matter where they are, wants to see the elimination of nuclear weapons. But most people, no matter where we are, unless they're already in the peace or nuclear abolition movement, don't really even know that there's such a thing as nuclear weapons that we are still struggling against, and that are still being developed. You know, new ones are being developed in all of the nuclear armed countries. So people don't know that. And even those that do know that, some of them say, well, you know, good luck with that. They don't understand that we went from 80,000 nuclear weapons in the world down to the 12,000 that we have today, and that we are still dismantling nuclear weapons that we agreed to dismantle during the Reagan-Gorbachev agreements. So we have had a lot of success in reducing the number of nuclear weapons in the world. We don't have that far to go to get rid of them. Other people are saying, well, what about North Korea? What about China? What about, you know, Russia? Well, the Veterans for Peace Nuclear Abolition Working Group wrote a nuclear posture review in contrast to the presidential nuclear posture review of the United States. And our nuclear posture review is full spectrum cooperation and negotiation, as opposed to the United States full spectrum dominance and bringing nuclear arms as the core of our defense posture. So what we did is evaluate the relationships between the United States and other nuclear armed countries that we're worried about, like China and North Korea and Russia, and took a look at what are the opportunities that we have now. What could we do with negotiations to get those countries to agree to disarm? And it's very clear and very easy and could be done very quickly if there was a political will to do so. So why don't we have the political will? Largely profits.
Yeah. You know, it should be mentioned that the other major nuclear power, of course, is the old Soviet Union. And after the wall came down and the old Soviet Union actually sort of exploded or imploded, the United States and some of its allies went and located these satellite weapons, which were in this Russian satellite countries, and identified those weapons and helped to dismantle them, secure them. And so, and it's in the Russians, they're not, Russians are not, despite some of the people in the United States think they're the warmongers, they are under Putin, very, very troublesome. But in the issue of nuclear weapons in particular, the Russians, they understand how dangerous these things are, and it's not really in their interest. And so the Russian military realizes that as probably more so than the Americans, because the Russians lost better part of 30 million people in World War II. They know what war really looks like. So there's a history of actually cooperation with our sort of called arch enemy, the Soviet Union. And as you say, there is room for cooperation, but I think that it has to take, the United States has to take some leadership in this. And if we start doing these, making these gestures of cooperation and reduction, I mean, we've come a long way, as you say, from 40,000 or 50,000 nuclear weapons to what we have now. Probably it would take the, for the Russians is have reduce or if not eliminate our Trident sub, which is like, they're sort of like a little nuclear island all on their own. They can actually control all of the nuclear destruction of the world, basically between those 16 submarines.
We think about this whole number of nuclear weapons. Nothing is meaningful beyond 100 in the world, because if 100 nuclear weapons were exploded, I'm talking modern nuclear weapons, it would, when you explode a nuclear weapon, not only do you produce radioactive elements that don't exist in nature, but the blast sucks up and fires and smoke and ash and lots of things into way up high in the stratosphere where they don't rain down quickly. And as a result of that, it would cover up enough of the sun to produce not complete crop failure, not a Earth ice ball, but 100 would produce enough of a crop failure that 2 billion people would starve to death. Nobody wants that.
Well, you know, there's,
go ahead.
There's something like 150 nations that signed the nuclear arms reduction treaty. And all of the nuclear powers, which includes this country, the Soviet Union, China, Europe, France, Pakistan, India, Israel. Israelis don't admit that having any nuclear weapons, but there's seven nuclear weapons countries. You know, right. there's absolutely no. We recently renamed the chapter Daniel Ellsberg, and as you may know, he was a major. He wrote a book about nuclear weapons and his participation in developing this sort of strategy for using nuclear weapons. And you know, I just redid our brochure, and he says nuclear weapons are immoral and insane, and that is basically the sort of the bottom line. He described them owning a nuclear weapon is actually a terrorist act, and the United States is a terrorist act in that sense, and probably in other senses too. Well, great. I want to thank you.
I like the way you talked about that owning a nuclear weapon is a terrorist act, because some people are worried about what if a nuclear weapon was used and don't quite think about nuclear weapons are used every day to threaten other countries. It's like walking into a bank with a gun. That's illegal, immoral, dangerous. And we're doing it all the time, because if you don't follow what the United States wants you to do as a country, then we are going to threaten you with nuclear annihilation.
And we've got a long record of doing it. In addition to the bombs we dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we threatened to use them in Korea. We threatened to use them in Vietnam. They've got them. You know, we've got tactical nuclear weapons in Europe, which is part of the quid pro quo with the Russians. You know, they're all and it's really a really crazy football game of threat, you know. And as Ellsberg and others have noted, the controls over who fires a nuclear weapon or who launches it is sloppy. They're not badly trained. They know the triggers are not not well monitored. It's a huge mess, and it's something that actually could happen quite accidentally. And that's probably one of the best reasons there is to for getting rid of them.
But there's so much more about our tour that we have, coming up. One of the things in, is it Victoria? We'll be going over to the, we'll be doing the
The
boat,
Victoria wooden,
the wooden
the
boat.
classic boat show, yeah.
And then in Rainville, at the wharf, we'll be probably doing a presentation where Greenpeace left for their first mission to Alaska, where they were protesting the
Underground.
underground atomic weapons that the military was using, the US military. And then coming back into Port Townsend and doing a wooden boat show there. We'll be before that going by Bangor and Indian Island, like Helen mentioned. And then it'll be a super fun trip going out back into the Pacific Ocean and down through the Columbia to Vancouver, Washington for a peace fair that they're hosting there. And then around the Columbia River into the Willamette River, which is in my backyard in Eugene, Oregon. So it's really special to me. I've been involved with the river keepers of the Columbia and the Willamette and the Mackenzie Rivers for some time, and I'm really excited about the work they're doing because not only are we building these weapons of mass destruction that we want to stop, but we're also causing a big mess. And most of the people who work within these facilities aren't allowed to talk about it. They have to sign NDAs. Around their job because they're the government keeps them so locked down in what they can say. So it's hard to get information. We know that the water is polluted. We know that the fish are causing cancer. We know there's problems. But when that boat comes into Oregon, it'll feel really special for me to have the boat there. It we did stop in Newport on the way through coming here where we got to have Cheekchoke join us on the ground crew. She did crew for from Eureka to Newport, Oregon, which is really cool. I can't wait to talk to you more about that, how it was, and then get more time on the boat. So it's really great getting to have the boat in our backyard. We'll go into Portland, where I have a lot of family who will get to see the boat. My family's also from Hawaii, so my family got to see the boat there. And having the boat in Hawaii was really cool because every time anybody would see it that had a memory of it, they would just feel so welcome to come up and say, I remember when this boat was here. I remember what you guys were doing. I know this boat. Whoa, what, why is it? This is so cool to see it. And that to me takes off so much pressure of how heavy of a topic this is. You're talking about annihilating the entire world and the population. And our government is doing it, piece by piece, island by water, by just taking over whatever it can and destroying the resources that are around it, and not cleaning up after themselves and not making us go out and put the effort into gathering, organizing and doing cleanup for what they, the destruction they've already caused. So getting to sail the boat for world peace is something that kind of brings a lighter side, an airier side to something that's really heavy, a really heavy topic.
Well, great. I want you to hold that thought and hold those statements, because when you come down back from Canada, you're not going to stop here. But I mean, maybe when you get through with your Columbia River and Portland Columbia River tour, we could do another podcast or radio show, because you'll have a lot more to talk about at that point. I'd love to opportunity. It may be what would be end of August, early September.
Mid-September.
Yeah, mid-September. That'd be great, because that would be ready for the September program. I've got to put one of these shows out once a month for the radio station, and it's usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. And that would be, why don't you put that on your docket? And I'd love to have you, as many of you, certainly you, Michelle, and Helen, if you're still on board. And
I'm late.
Chicho, are you all three going to be on board?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I'd look forward to having you again on a mid-September show. We can follow that up. We'll talk to each other. We'll talk to each other before you get out of town, I'm sure. So thanks again. This has been great. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you, Helen and Michelle, our new managers, and also Chico. Is that right, Chico?
Yeah, close.
Chico. So this is broadcast on KODX 96.9 FM, and the program will be archived on their radio station, but also on VFP92.org. So it'll be a broadcast that you can access anytime you want as soon as it gets it posted. So thank you again, Helen, Michelle, and Chico, for being on the Veterans for Peace radio show. My name is Mike Diedrich, and that's all for now. Thank you.